This podcast replay is brought to you by Hijinx Sports Grill in Boca. Enjoy happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. Reserve a VIP table online and receive one free sparkling wine. Follow them on Instagram at Hijinx Sports Grill.
We promised you that Noah Hyles would be joining us. Panthers writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You can follow him on Twitter at underscore Noah Hyles. Noah, good evening, sir. Now, you know, I'm looking at your Twitter feed, and it says you're a big Dave and Buster's fan. All right,
I sure am.
So what is the must thing that Noah Hyles does at Dave and Buster's?
Well, listen, I just met you guys. I don't want to come off cocky, but I am the owner of 8 medium Guitar Hero records at Dave and Buster's.
Oh, boy.
Yes, 8. Yes. I've got a couple games I like playing there. So, yeah, Guitar Hero is my favorite one. Now, some places, I was in Brooklyn last week to cover basketball. They didn't have one. I take that Dave and Buster's down a peg because they did not have that game. I'm also a big fan of Deal or No Deal. That's another great game there. But I like to call myself a Dave and Buster's connoisseur. Everywhere I go, I try to get one. I might have to head to one tomorrow with my extra day here in Miami. All right.
So wait a minute. And by the way, the one you want to go to is right off of I-95.
All right.
And it's just off of Sterling. Yeah. Sterling and Sterling. I-95.
Noted.
It's called what? Oakwood Plaza. That's where
Oakwood
you want to go.
Plaza. All right.
Now
I'm gonna write that down.
Now you know I'm a rock man at heart, so I love my rock, my heavy metal.
All
so
right.
you know you're already in my wheelhouse with this Guitar Hero stuff, even though I suck at it, but I do enjoy like acting like I can jam or something. So, what's your favorite ones? What are your favorite bands to jam to?
Rage Against the Machine, Bulls on Parade is my favorite song of all time to play there. Funny story, in the North Hills location in Pittsburgh, there was, I don't know who they were, JSW. They held the record on that song for like a year. And every time I'd go there, I'd get closer and closer. I had 7 times in a row, I was perfect. But I still didn't get enough bonus points to beat it. And then like the final time I went, like at the end of this last summer, I beat it. And I debated on never going back again. Like, that's how happy I was. Like, I just wanted to, like, walk off the field. Like, Babe Ruth hit 3 home runs in his last game and just walked off the field for good. Like, I thought about doing the same.
Okay. By the way, Iron Maiden, I noticed, is a pain in the ass, which is my favorite metal band. But on Guitar Hero, holy crap, dude, that shit is hard.
Yes, it is not easy. But I like the challenges. You know, the record ones, what other records? I don't know. We could talk about Guitar Hero all day, which we could if you're up for it.
No. Yeah. I mean, but listen, you hit me with that. When I saw it, I said, that's it. Now you hit Guitar Hero. We could go on for hours. All right. So tonight, is it all about Abanaconda?
Abanaconda.
Abanaconda, really, because I look at Slovis, and I'm looking at 7 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking at him to be the impact player. Is it more about Miami having to focus on that beast running the football?
He is a beast, but I'm not confident that he's playing today. So in the final possession of last week's game against Duke, he was on the sidelines, and they went with a backup when they needed to move the sticks to get a first down. They actually didn't get it. And we asked, we said, why wasn't he on the field? And he said he wasn't available. He was banged up. And, you know, Pitt doesn't reveal a lot of injury information. I can't say more than that. But if he doesn't go, I will say that Pitt has other really good running backs. Against Syracuse earlier this month, he did not dress. And Pitt put Rodney Hammond Jr. as his backup in his spot. And he ran for 124 yards and a touchdown and helped Pitt beat Syracuse. So they have other really good running backs. Sebo Flemister is another really good one. He was a transfer from Notre Dame. So they're really deep in the backfield. However, Izzy Abanaconda is a step above most running backs in the country. I'd put him in the top 3. Would not be shocked to see him get some All-American recognition once this season ends.
Thanks for joining us, Noah. And listen, just to kind of piggyback off what you're saying about the running game, Hammond and Davis both ran over, if I'm not mistaken. I think they went over 500 yards each last season. I have it up right here. So Vincent Davis ran over 500, and Ronnie Hammond, they both went over 500. So these are no slouches at running back. They did so last year with limited carries. So just because Abanaconda is not in the game, that doesn't necessarily mean that the game plan is going to change much. Am I right or am I wrong?
That's exactly it. The game plan is going to – I apologize. The mic.
You're good.
Testing the microphone. But Yeah, the game plan is going to remain the same. I mean, Izzy's missed time in other games too against Georgia Tech. Yeah, they leaned heavily on Vincent Davis. Now, he's had some fumbling problems. So it's been Sebo Flemister in place of Vincent Davis. But Davis is a four-year letterman for Pitt. So he's played a lot of football as well in this backfield. I could see him getting touches tonight if Abanikanda doesn't play. But regardless, they love to run the football with this offense. Frank Signetti runs that pro-style offense. Back when he was at Pitt the first time, you might remember Deion Lewis and Ray Graham when they were a power duo. That's when Pitt was running the ball great, and they're going to look to do the same. They've done the same all year this year, and regardless if Izzy's healthy or not, Hammond Jr. showed he can tote the rock just fine, not only against Syracuse, he did against West Virginia in the season opener as well.
You look at this team overall. What are your impressions from the Canes from afar? Because, brother, it has been a long season down here as Mario's first year and trying to kind of weed out what he likes, what he doesn't like. It's been rough, my brother. So I'm wondering from your point of view, Noah, how do you see what you're watching from the Canes from afar?
I'll tell you what, when I looked at the schedule at the beginning of this year, I had high hopes for this one. I'm like, wow, Pitt and Miami, they both should be, you know, top 15 teams at the end of the year. This will probably be for an ACC title game spot, you know, maybe even a playoff spot if all goes right. And it hasn't worked out for either team, really. But, I mean, Miami's, it's been tough, I've noticed. I mean, quarterback injuries and just the offense in general obviously hasn't worked out for the way you guys would like it. And it just goes to show how hard it truly is to build a program in a city where Pittsburgh and Miami can relate to this, where when you have pro sports teams in the same city, it's hard. When you're in, for us, the comparison is always Penn State. And there's nothing else in Happy Valley. There's nothing. It's the middle of nowhere. And the same can be said for most, you know, SEC schools. Like, that's the focal point of those towns is that team. But when you're in a pro sports town like Miami, like Pittsburgh, and a few others, if you don't win, people aren't going to buy in. And while, you know, you guys got some weather and some boosters that kind of help your efforts a little bit, it's still winning drives all. And you can bring all these kids in through the portal or through NIL. But if there's more L's than W's at the end of the year, they're not going to stick around regardless if you're at Pittsburgh, Ohio State, Miami, wherever. And it just goes to show, yeah, this winning business ain't easy in the Division I level.
So let me ask you something, Noah. Because you bring something interesting, because that's something I've talked about here since we're a pro town. And then the other thing is, Miami's a private school, and most of us, like, I couldn't afford, like, my daughter went a little bit to, she did some medical stuff over at UM, but it was all on scholarship, you know, and she went to FIU, which is what most of us parents can afford to send our kids to, FIU and FAU, the state schools, or hell, you can send them to FSU. It's still cheaper, way cheaper than Miami. So the alumni base is not big. And really, Miami is kind of treated like the sixth pro team in town with the, you know, with the other five pro teams, including the MLS. And they're kind of treated like a pro team because they don't really have an alumni base that's big enough that'll fill 30, 40,000 seats alone. No, dude, you'll be lucky to get 2,000, you know, students to go to a game. I don't know if you've ever been on the UM campus. Half the faces on that campus are from other countries, not even in this country. So it's a weird dynamic for the University of Miami. How is it in Pittsburgh? Do they treat the Panthers also like a pro team almost, like they do here in Miami?
And there's something else you could probably relate to it too, is if your college team isn't winning, high school football takes preference in our area and probably in this area as well. Yep. I mean, those are two, Western PA, I'm not going to say it's South Florida good, but if you look, I mean, Western PA is up there every time as far as, you know, big time football legends go, and it's a huge interest.
Even, and you know, quarterbacks, baby. You get all the quarterbacks.
Quarterback capital of the world, man. Yeah, and that's it. It's if you're not winning, they're not going to be interested. Now, you know, and that's something I've talked a lot about with the writers this year, is Pitt kind of had a great opportunity to be the toast of the town with the Steelers probably having their first losing record since 2003. They could, if Pitt just doesn't get upset by Georgia Tech and Louisville, you know, their losses are to Tennessee and North Carolina, two very respectful losses. They're definitely a top 20 team, and they're what the whole city rallied around. Similar thing happened last year when Kenny Pickett really stepped his game up, and you know, people went out and supported Pitt. And there's been years where that's happened. But, yeah, like you said, if it's not good, then, yeah, it's hard to gain alumni support. Like Miami, you know, Pitt does not have a stadium on its campus. So, you know, if you're a student, you're trying to get there, you got to catch an Uber, you got to ride the T across town, or, you know, plan a designated driver to get you over there. And parking's tough. It's hard to create a great game day atmosphere. Right. And now alumni show up, same for you guys. You know, I'm sure when Florida State comes here, you got no problem.
Right. Right.
Bringing people in. And if you saw at the beginning of the year when Pitt hosted West Virginia, it was the highest attended sporting event in the city's history. But after that, when Tennessee comes in, you got 15,000 Tennessee fans in the stadium. And that's just the reality that Pitt has. And it's tough. It's tough to win recruits, you know, with that type of, you know, inconsistent attendance and challenges. Yeah, it can really, really be difficult. I mean, Pitt's had 2 4-stars decommit in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, for a program like Pitt, that's devastating, because you need those, you know, guys like Pickett will come here as a 3-star and they'll stay a while and they'll eventually pan out. But that's a tough thing to rely on year in and year out for developing 3-stars into NFL quarterbacks or NFL talent. You can't prey on that every year. You need to get the high-end guys, and those high-end guys don't want to play in empty stadiums, and especially empty stadiums in the cold.
Which is why you got to give a huge thumbs up and a huge kudos and a huge, you know, attaboy to Pat Narduzzi. Because no matter what the decommitments, no matter how many or how often they are, or no matter what Pitt's record, you know what you're going to get with a Pat Narduzzi coach team. You're going to get running the ball. You're going to get time control offense or ball control offense, a hard-nosed defense, a tough defensive line. And I just want – we talked about the running game. In comparison to last season, this season, in comparison to last season, Pitt had 3 guys over 500 yards, right? This year, I want to talk about the passing game. I'm sorry. Now I want to talk about the passing game. Obviously, you lose Jordan Addison. Biletnikoff winner goes off to USC. He had 1,500 yards receiving last year. But Jared Wayne is not – tell me how – this is the question. Tell me how much of a drop-off, if any, Jared Wayne is. I mean, 47 catches, 658 yards last season. Right now – he's on pace to, he was already over 800 yards on only 44 catches, so only has 2 touchdowns. But how different is the offense? I'm assuming you're going to say not much because they still like to run the ball. But in terms of passing the ball, how different is this offense?
And it's actually a very different offense, because Mark Whipple left as the offensive coordinator, went over to Nebraska, and they put more of an emphasis on the run. But on the Addison point, Wayne is a very talented receiver. I'm not going to call him Jordan Addison because there aren't any receivers in the country who are Jordan Addison. Mm-hmm. He's the Biletnikoff winner, and he's going to be a first-round pick. And, you know, Pitt's had a couple of guys, but, you know, when Jordan Addison put himself in the same conversation as Larry Fitzgerald last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's no one on this team that's doing that. However, Wayne is a good one, but what hurts with Addison's departure is that you had Wayne as a 2 behind Addison.
Right.
So when Wayne steps up, it's now who's your 2? And they have Kanate Mumfield, a kid who transferred in from Akron. He was a freshman All-American. He's been good, but that was supposed to be their 3. And then the guy Bud Means, who's supposed to be their 4, is now the 3, and so on and so forth. So that's been a little tough. You know, you're putting guys in spots that they weren't anticipating to be in. Now they had a whole offseason to prepare for that. Mm-hmm. But with a new OC, a new quarterback, and basically 2 of the 3 receivers are new. I mean, it's showed that the passing game has had its problems, and they like to rely on the run, but every now and then they can sprinkle in a couple of big plays in the pass.
So, obviously, Slovis is the new guy in town manning the offense at the quarterback position, and everybody knows tight end is a quarterback's best friend. Talk to me about Bartholomew, because since it's a new system, since it's a new quarterback, and a tight end is a quarterback's best friend, is he one of those run blocking guys that'll catch an occasional pass, or is he a threat to go down the field against Miami's pass defense?
Mike, I get more emails about Gavin Bartholomew than any other player on this team. He was a freshman All-American last year. There were so many people who had so high expectations for him, and they just don't throw him the football. I don't know why. We've asked their passing game coordinator about it. We've asked their offensive coordinator about it. We've asked the head coach. We've asked the quarterback. He's open sometimes. He is a very talented player. I would encourage you to go look against what he did against Tennessee. He had a hurdle on the sideline. It was, I think, the top play in SportsCenter that week. He is a stud of an athlete. And, you know, a lot of people around here think he might end up hitting the portal simply because he's not getting the football a lot. There were people who thought he would be a shoe-in to be, you know, going up against Miami's tight end as all first team all conference this year. And he's just simply not getting enough looks. Wow. I mean, he is a great run blocker. And I will say that Pitt has three tight ends, and they moved actually a guard to tight end as well. So they have four really good run blocking tight ends, which helps, you know, Izzy get those 5 yard runs into 10, 15 yard runs. But, you know, that's probably been, that'll probably be one of the biggest areas of focus. Man. If he's back and Keaton is back next year, is a way to get Gavin involved, because he is a dynamic playmaker. He's got speed, he's got athleticism, and he's got a nice pair of hands, and they're really not tapping fully into his potential, in my opinion.
Noah, let me ask you something, and this is it's kind of a general ACC question. Clemson doesn't look like themselves. No. They lost their defensive coordinator, obviously, to Oklahoma. They lost their AD to here to Miami. And so Dabo's lost a lot. And obviously, ukulele didn't look very good today. Do you think that enough has happened to Clemson that it's kind of opened the door for whoever wants to...
Right.
Pitt, Miami, you name it, Florida State. Well,
right.
Actually, Florida State might be closer than any other team in the ACC right now. But is the Clemson dominance about to take a hit, or do you think it's just an aberration what's going on and Dabo will overcome some major losses?
I don't think it's necessarily taking a hit. I just think that, you know, like, Clemson wasn't ever Bama. It wasn't ever, you know, what Georgia is now. It was a solid program that just had back-to-back incredible quarterbacks. That's the thing that makes the difference in these programs. If you put a Deshaun Watson or a Trevor Lawrence on any team, if you put him on Michigan right now, imagine how good that team is. If you put him on LSU or TCU, you know, you look, it's just look at what North Carolina has right now, case in point. And it's just, they were a good program that got a really good quarterback, and that led to other receivers saying, hey, I want to play with that guy. And they came in, they made plays, although they had good receivers before that. But they were able to take that next step because they had a really good quarterback, and they replaced him with an even higher profile recruited quarterback. And those, you know, however many years, 6, 7 years or whatever, they had those two guys, that's what makes the difference. And but right now, like I said, without those guys, yeah, they take that regression. I still think top to bottom.
Well, but defensively too, my brother, right? Because
that
defensive coordinator got, there was a lot of guys that went to the NFL during his stretch too, man.
That's what I'm saying, is when you have a good quarterback, you win games, and then everyone wants to play for you because the alumni is there. And,
that's right.
You know, you need a quarterback to win, and once you're winning, it's easier to sign everything. Everything comes easier with those W's, right? So now that that's kind of regressed, you look around and Florida State's got a talented quarterback. North Carolina's got a talented quarterback. And this is like the time right now where the ACC's begging someone to take over. It's kind of like where the Pac-12 was at the beginning of this season. And you look, a good quarterback goes to the Pac-12, and now there's a front runner. So I would not be shocked to see a Miami, a Florida State, a North Carolina, those teams that have, I mean, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this conference too, if you really think about it. So, and Clemson has another really talented quarterback ready and waiting whenever Uiagalelei leaves as well. So it could be anyone, but that's the thing. Like, you can point to like 5 or 6 teams in the ACC this year and say, well, if they just didn't blow this 1 or 2 games, they would win this conference. You could point at North Carolina right now. If they didn't just stink these last 2 games, Drake May would be the Heisman Trophy winner right now if he didn't lose these last 2 weeks. You could point at Pitt and say, you know what, if they just won every game that they took a lead into the fourth quarter, their only loss would be Tennessee in overtime with a backup quarterback. You know, like, you can point at all of these programs. Florida State's lost games that it should have won, and NC State, Wake Forest, all these teams have lost these dumb football games, and it's kind of cannibalized themselves. And we've seen that other conferences do that in the past with the Big 12, with the Pac-12, but the ACC is kind of doing it right now. The conference is begging, saying, someone please take control, be the top dog here. And that's going to come down to quarterback play, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the way Jordan Travis has improved every year, and then going into next year, that's the school right now that I give them the inside track on challenging Clemson for superiority in the ACC.
Yeah.
Nothing else, man.
Noah, give us some prediction, my brother. Give us a prediction.
All right, I predicted Pitt 27-21. However, when I made that prediction, I did not know that its top two defensive linemen would be out, which is some news that broke earlier today. Kalijah Kancey and Habakkuk Baldonado, two guys we'll probably be seeing on Sunday next season, are not playing tonight against Miami. And when Pitt does not have Kalijah Kancey, it's a completely different team. Watch the first half when it played North Carolina earlier this year. Then he got ejected for targeting late in the second quarter. Go ahead and watch what Drake May did against that defense in the second half. Now, I don't think there's going to be a Drake May out there playing in orange and green tonight, but there's some pretty talented quarterbacks over there. So without Kancey and Haba, I think it might be closer. So I'll reduce it. I'll say 24-21 Pitt.
All right. Good stuff. Follow him on Twitter at @_NoahHiles. Catch his work there at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Noah, thank you for the time, my brother, and keep those frets flying, baby.
Absolutely, baby. We don't play hard. We don't use that orange button. No way. We keep it simple.
There you go.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, my brother. Good stuff. Noah Hiles, good stuff there.